Hello, 3CR. So good to be with you again as we continue deeper into winter together and also deeper into our series, 133. If you missed last week, 133 is all about the first 133 chapters of the New Testament. They cover Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, Acts, and Romans, and we want to do them together. The Bible says, "Behold how good and pleasant it is when brothers dwell together in unity," because it's in that place that God commands his blessing. And so we are unifying around these 133 chapters together. And at the moment, we're heading towards the end of Matthew. And I want to pick up on something in Matthew chapter 25. Reading to you from verse 31, it says the following: "When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, he will sit on his glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate the people one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He'll put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. Then the king will say to those on his right, 'Come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I needed clothes and you clothed me. I was sick and you looked after me. I was in prison and you came to visit me.' Then the righteous will answer him, 'Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you?' Then Jesus said, 'The king will reply, Truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. Whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me.'" I don't know what stirs in you when you hear or read that portion of scripture. In me, there's just this roar, because that's my story. It might be your story, our story. It's 3CI's story. It's definitely my family's story. Because many years ago, when we first stumbled into 3CI, I didn't actually want to come to 3CI. We were in a bad place. We were kind of punch drunk from the season of life that we were going through. We were newlywed, and my wife and I both came from broken homes, and we were kind of perpetuating a similar cycle. And we had alienated ourselves from church, from our believing friends, and we had sort of gotten ourselves into this little woe is me huddle. And then my wife heard about 3CI, and she wanted to come and visit this strange community that met in Gauteng Hoërskool's hall. Needless to say, I think she went for about 3 months on her own before I reluctantly dragged myself there. And I can remember the first time I visited 3CI, very self-centered and superficial. I went home and I said to my wife, "I don't really think it's the church for me. There were two fast songs, two slow songs, and a 20-minute preach in a school hall." And I said to her, "I don't think they can really do much in that environment. You know, I'm a mega church kind of a guy, me-centered, maybe more superficial than I would have liked to admit." So I stayed at home for a few more weeks, and she kept coming back with a good report. And eventually, maybe the weather was perfect or there was nothing on TV. For whatever reason, I decided, well, let me try out 3CI again. And that second time literally changed my life, changed my eternity. See, unfortunately, it unpacks in not the most pleasant way, but I was having a conversation with a guy named Rob. And I remember while he's talking, I'm thinking to myself, I must have had a conversation with this man before, because the details that he's alluding to and stories that he's touching on reflect the fact that he knows a little bit more of me than I know of him. And we must have had a conversation somewhere. And while he's talking, you know that kind of movie setup where the voice grows silent and your brain is processing? I'm suddenly thinking, you know, maybe I met him the last time I was here, the first time I was here. And in that moment, I can clearly remember where I was standing, the direction I was facing in the hall. I suddenly thought to myself, I don't know what to do with this. How is this possible? And after chatting to Rob, another elderly man, a guy named Keith, came up to me and he started sharing. And I mentioned to him that, you know, we hadn't really been here often. And I said, I mean, I haven't even met Pastor Nick. And I remember he referring to Nick saying, no, we don't call him Pastor Nick. We're not that important here. We're just family. I'll never forget that. And I'll never forget Joanne Grenfell turning around. She sat in front of us as the meeting ended. She turned around, introduced herself. And I can remember not knowing what to do with this. You see, because I'd heard of a church that was very, very clever and very strategic. What they did was, during their announcements, they would have, you know, that's kind of moment where they say, hey, listen, are there any new people here? Raise a hand because we've got something for you. And then as the hands go up, they would hand out these coffee mugs. And then they'd say to the new guys, listen, with that coffee mug, you can have as many cappuccinos as you want, hot chocolates, tea, you name it, on us today. Yeah, float out of here. The bathrooms are to your left. But what the new guys didn't realize was they walked around with this massive sign saying, I'm new here. So everyone knew who was new, and they make a beeline and introduce themselves and, no, you go in front of us. No, please, hey, can I get the chair for you? Because everyone knew they were new. But I couldn't figure out 3CR system, to the point where the first time I actually had coffee with Nick Davis, who was leading 3CR at the time, one of my first questions was, tell me how. I can't reverse engineer this thing. Because I was so superficial, I didn't even realize it was genuine. I thought there had to be a system. Okay, it's your duty this Sunday to be nice to the weird guys and the new guys and the guy who sits in the wrong place and parks in the pastor's parking spot. None of that. It was genuine. And I so wrestled with this before I suddenly realized, actually, this is Matthew 25 in action right in front of my very own eyes. And I want to say to you, 3CR, I am eternally indebted to you because I was that stranger and you welcomed me and I was sick and you looked after me and my wife and my children. We are eternally indebted to this community for living out Matthew 25. I've subsequently discovered that I'm not the only one. They did a study. There's a book called Insights from the Unchurched. And what they did was they contacted a lot of people like me who were unchurched. So not changing churches or maybe changed jobs and moved to Gauteng and now you're looking for somewhere to knit in. Unchurched. People beaten and battered by life, maybe disillusioned by church or Christianity and didn't really want to get involved in it. And they wanted to know, what are some of the things that influenced people's hearts to get them to re-engage with the church or in many instances to engage for the very first time? And what they found was effectively Matthew 25. They said these kind of things. You know, I'm a stats guy. So they said 70% of people like me who popped in and tried out a church for the first time had decided whether or not they'd even come back ever again before the pastor got up to preach. So in other words, the person at the door, the people helping them park, the lady behind the coffee counter serving them, the guys leading worship, all influenced. It's this. Am I noticed? The least of these. Am I cared for? Is this a safe place? 70% would decide before the pastor even preached whether or not they would come back ever again. Of those who came back, 73% said the reason why they came back and the reason why they sank their roots into that community is because they made one friend. The power of eternity shifted because of one friendship. Another interesting statistic that really challenged me, I was reading this book while my wife and I were busy leading youth here at 3CR. And I discovered that one stat that just jumped out of the page because it was related to teenagers. And the stat was this. They said that they have found that all church-attending, Bible-reading, Jesus-loving teenage Christians, 50% of them drift between the ages of 18 and 25. Drift from God, from church, even from their faith, between the ages of 18 and 25. And this got under my skin. 50% drift from God. And they said the difference between those who drift and those who fly, those who hit their 20s and they're just more in love with Jesus, more living out Matthew 25, the difference between the two was that those who saw had five key relationships, just one season ahead of them in life, just to help them navigate those moments, just to effectively, when they see they're a stranger, invite them in. When they see that they're sick and need to look after, that they would care and show kindness and engage them in the community. Five people. And so I shared this with our youth leaders because this thing was really, really gripping my heart. And a few days later, I got a phone call from one of our leaders, a young married couple, and they broke the news to me. They said, on the back of what you shared, my wife and I have been praying about this, and we want to adopt a matric student. And I was like, you want to what? So it turns out one of the guys in their group, in our youth, teenage guy, about to press into his matric year, had heard over the December holidays that his parents were divorcing. And he had come to youth that night and said, listen, this might be the last time I'm here. And when they dug around the situation and around the statement, they found out this. His parents getting divorced meant his mom was leaving and going to Cape Town. And his father now had to float two families, had to take care of two households. and he couldn't afford it, and he had looked for work everywhere for months. But now he had to move. He had found work elsewhere, but he had to move far outside of the city, kind of in the sticks. It was the only way they could survive, which meant that this young man either had to do matric in a new school, or he had to abandon matric completely. And these guys decided, no, here's a need that we can step in and care for. And so they adopted this young man, took him into their home. Now, you've got to remember, this is a young married couple, small little home. I think he slept on the couch. But they fed him, they clothed him, they took him to school, they helped him study, they tested him. They got some of the satellite, our student guys involved to tutor him. And at the end of the year, I remember we even gathered together some school fees just to get him by so that he could stay in the city and get his matric without that massive shift in his matric year. And I remember even one of the subjects, he was top of his class that year in one of his subjects. But that's Matthew 25 in action. That's what Matthew 25 is talking about. It's this moment where we're not consumers, but we engage, we sacrifice, we love, and we care. And Jesus says, truly, I tell you, whatever you do for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you do for me. One of the translations actually said, whatever you do to them, you do to me. The least of these. The problem with the least of these is that it's the least of these. It's those who have nothing to offer in return. I heard recently that Beethoven, when he was composing in his 20s, he started losing his hearing. And by the time he was in his 40s, he was stone cold deaf. Beethoven, believe it or not. But he continued to compose. And they say that when his music debuted across Europe, everywhere, there was this standing ovation, this mass of applause. But because he was stone deaf, he couldn't hear a single clap. And yet he continued to compose. And the author of the biography says the following. He says, he continued to compose in silence. And 3CR Matthew 25 calls us to continue composing in silence. We might not hear the applause, but know one day you will hear the applause of heaven. Instead, we are called to compose in the silence, to create these melodies of worship, a fragrance of worship, as we put Matthew 25 into practice, knowing that what we do to the least of these, we do to Jesus himself. Composing in silence. And now, with COVID, with lockdown, with people hiding behind estate walls, the elderly too afraid to come out, there's so much more silence. But I charge you, 3CR, would you continue to compose in silence? And I want to show you why this is so important right here, right now. Not next week, not next season, not next month, but right here, right now. I read a book on American history. And it tells of this incredible pioneering spirit of these settlers that arrived on the shores of America. They came in on the east, and during the 15 and 1600s, they pioneered their way all the way across to the west coast. And this is where Hollywood set up their time frame. You know, the cowboys, this rough and rugged, living out in the prairies, hunting buffalo, you know, the Indians coming over the hills. It's that period. It's an incredibly adventurous, vivacious, colorful, pioneering life. But what the author of this book said, he said, once they got to the West Coast, that pioneering spirit died, and in its place was born the American dream. The white picket fence, the perfectly manicured garden, a bigger house, a bigger car, a little Bitcoin on the side, and European travels for Christmas. And he said, that, in that moment, when they reached that West Coast, pioneering made way for the American dream. You know why it's so important that we lay hold of Matthew 25 in this season, 3CR? It's because we have gone through this building project. We've landed on that East Coast, and we've had this dry, barren land in front of us, and we've seen this building come about, and we've sown sacrificially. We've given, and we've lived adventurously and generously, and we poured our heart and soul into this community. But the building project is over. We've reached our West Coast, and now it's in the nature of man to settle, to go from community to consuming, to go from caring to conserving. And so one of the main reasons why I felt I have to unpack this is because that's where we're at, and this is the danger, that we begin to shift from this caring to consuming. Another reason why this is so important is, did you know that this story, this account, is not a parable? Jesus is pulling back the curtain to time, and he's leaning into that day when we stand before God and give an account for our lives. You know that is the very last thing he imparts to his disciples? That's the last teaching he gives, and he ends it with telling them, "Truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me." That's weighty. But he builds it on a parable that goes just before. See, he tells the parable, and I'm sure you're familiar with this one, where a master gives his servants 5 talents of gold to one, 2 talents of gold to another, and 1 talent of gold to the third. But remember, Jesus' words say, the master is going away, and so he gives these talents to his servants. And when he comes back, he asks them what they've done with this. And then Jesus tells us about that day when Jesus comes back, fetches us, and we give an account for our lives. It's weighty, that line. Whatever you do for the least of these, you do for me. But remember what he says. He says he gave 5 talents to one servant, 2 talents of gold, it's a currency, to another. But I like the fact that it's a talent, and 1 talent of gold to the third. And when he comes back, the one with 5 had made 5 more, and the one with 2 had made 2 more. And the one that was given 1, in the message, it says the following. It says, this is the servant talking to Jesus. He says, "I was afraid I might disappoint you, so I found a good hiding place and buried the talent you gave me. I buried my hospitality. I buried my urge to pray for 3CI and for the city. I buried my ability to pick up on people who just need some comfort and some care. I buried that urge that I had just to phone so-and-so and wish them happy birthday. I buried the talent that you gave me." And Jesus' reply to him is, "What a terrible way to live." You know why Matthew 25 is so important for us? Because we're at this change of seasons, change of chapters, and we can be tempted to go from caring to consuming. You know why Matthew 25 is so important? Because Jesus says, if we go to consuming, he calls that a terrible way to live, 3CI, a terrible way to live. You know that 3CI was built on Matthew 25. A man named Ashley Bell planted 3CI when he was in his mid-40s. Picture that. In 10 years' time, I'll be in my mid-40s. Imagine being 45 and uprooting your entire family, handing over your business, and moving to a foreign city inland to start a church. And you know why he did so? He said, because he couldn't let go of this statement. People are waiting on the other side of your obedience. People are waiting on the other side of your obedience. That is the reason why we have this wall with 3,000 bricks from our previous tent, the walls that surrounded our tent. Our previous venue, we took these bricks and we built them into our new building because we cannot afford to lose this 3CR. We cannot afford to move away from these final words that Jesus gave to his disciples. And we cannot move from the bedrock of what this community was built on. People are waiting on the other side of my obedience. You know what? I was waiting. My wife and I were waiting. My children were waiting. But there was an act of obedience as Ashley and Nadine came and planted this church. There was an act of obedience when Rob came and chatted to me, Joanne and Keith and Kevin and all those in 3CR. There was this act of obedience, and they didn't even realize we were waiting on the other side of their obedience. I didn't even realize I was waiting on the other side of their obedience. On the way here, we are recording at night, and we just heard that South Africa is going into stage 4 load shedding. It's a Thursday evening. Ricky and I are here recording. My family, in a few minutes, will be sitting at home in the dark. I passed by someone at the coffee shop and mentioned I'm on my way to recording. And he is in our life group, and he lives in our neighborhood. And just as I walked up here to come and record, I get this message. "Hey, but listen, if need be, I'm happy to go to your home, start the generator for your family, make sure they've got lights, in case this recording overshoots the hour when load shedding starts." That's the bricks. Those are the Matthew 25 moments that 3CI has been built on. Thank you, Ruan. God bless you, Ruan. 3CI, this is what we are called to. A guy named Oskina says the following. He says, if we move from caring to consuming, the gospel gets neutralized, marginalized, and it becomes meaningless to the city. Neutralized, marginalized, and it becomes meaningless to the city. And so Jesus says, "Truly I tell you, whatever you do for one of the least of these, you're doing for me." Oskinus goes on to say the following. He says, "For Jesus, spirituality is clearly not a life of contemplation divorced from a life of action. There is nothing of the super spiritual in Jesus or the secular distortion we so often encounter in the church. There is only a rhythm of engagement and withdrawal, work and rest, release and recharge, crowds and solitude in the midst of the most effective public life ever lived. I love the way he phrases that. Release and recharge, crowds and solitude, engagement and withdrawal. Remember last week, I unpacked that word righteousness and how it's used in Scripture. It's used to describe God's standard of how we're to approach Him. We can only do it through the finished work of Christ, but that allows us to enter His throne room boldly, to drink deeply from His presence, the whole recharge. And then He says, then you release. It's the work of the cross and then the walk of the cross. Righteousness, the way we, God's standard for how we engage with the world. And that's what Oz is calling us to. That is what Matthew 25 is calling us to. To refuel and then release. To rest and then to work. To engage with God and then engage with His people. And we're not talking about a works ethic here. We're not working for our salvation here. This is an overflow. When we have our time with God, when we are drinking deeply from Him, it flows naturally in there. You know, I heard recently that the Niagara Falls, the water that flows over the Niagara Falls, powers two cities in two nations. It provides light for two cities in two nations. See, that's the power behind a flow. When the Spirit of God, the presence of God, and our daily devotions and our pressing into His presence flows into the world, there's power there. As much as the Niagara Falls brings light to cities, our presence and drenching ourselves in God and overflowing into the world becomes salt and light for them. And this is what Jesus is calling us to. I had the most remarkable moment not too long ago where I witnessed this firsthand, this overflow in power. I was sitting in, and I'll mention it because it's important, Old Town Italy in Menland, Maine. I was having a meal with a man. He was a pastor, and his son was getting married, and I was officiating the wedding. And he had just wanted to meet me because his son and his soon-to-be daughter-in-law had decided they were going to root themselves in 3CR. And as a pastor, he wants to make sure his children will be safe. So we were sitting there just chatting, just getting to know one another as we were nearing the wedding day. And right at the very end, it's time for the bill. So I asked the waitress to bring us the bill. And he's like, no, I've got the. I'm like, please, not a chance. I will get this. I would love to serve you, Matthew 25. So the waitress eventually arrives and I grab the little bill fold from her while he's sitting on the other side. Sort of, should I maybe grab my wallet so we can maybe go Harvey's? I'm like, no problem. And I open up the bill fold and there's nothing in there. And I look up to her and she's got a huge smile on her face. And I said, and now? She says to me, well, as I printed it out to come and bring you the bill, the manager said, please tell them that this one's on the house. I'm like, what? I don't know, still to this day, I don't know which manager, and I don't even know necessarily who that manager was. I don't know if they were part of 3CR, or if they just knew that we were pastors. I have no idea. But this waitress is standing there with eyes wide open, massive smile. And the man that I'm having had the meal with, he's going like, what? I've never seen that before. And I said, please tell the manager. I say, thank you so much. She said, but there's more. I'm like, more what? I'm thinking, are we going to get dessert or something like that? She said, just as the manager had taken this slip from me and said, this is paid, and I'm walking with this empty billfold, someone else makes a beeline to me and says, hey, listen, those guys there at table 12, can I pay for their meal? And she opens it up. She says, the manager's already paid. And she did not know what to do with this because it's the power of overflow from our time with God bleeding into and salting and lighting the world around us. There's power in that. There's so much power in that. And there's so much importance in this, not only because it's done to the least of these as doing to Jesus, but because it has an influence on the world around us. There's so much power there that did you know that the Nazis hated deacons? I'll end with this. Nazis hated deacons. I read this article where the German army, when they invaded Holland, one of the first things that they did once they'd taken ground was they made the office of a deacon illegal. They banned it from the churches. You know why? Because they know the power of Matthew 25. They know the power of someone seeing a stranger and inviting them in, someone needing clothes and being clothed, of the sick being looked after and those in prison being visited. They know the power. They know the power of what happens when what goes down in church leaks into the world, and they wanted to put a stop to it. The deacon role was taken out. They didn't close churches down. They didn't remove the office of a pastor. They removed and they made illegal the office of a deacon. Because that overflow into the world, that righteous act, God's standard of how we are to deal with the world, carries power and influence. And so that's my message this week. That's Matthew 25's message this week, 3CR. That we continue to engage in our community, in this 3CR family, in those around us. We continue to engage and we keep a watch out for the red flags of wanting to become consumers, so that the gospel doesn't become neutralized, marginalized, and meaningless in our city. But instead, we take that banner call of Ashley Bell that people are waiting on the other side of our obedience.